This episode of The Busy Marketer is brought to you by Marketing Recap, the live interactive show that brings you the latest news from the world of digital marketing each Thursday. You can watch this fun and informative show live on Google+ and YouTube and interact with the roundtable during a simultaneous Twitter chat, #MRCap. Can't make the live show? Listen to past episodes by subscribing to the Marketing Recap podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Learn more about the show and sign up for news and show updates at marketingrecap.com.
What happened during that year is we went from doing between $1.5 million to $2 million a year to doing less than $500,000 a year, but we suffered absolutely zero loss in profit. We actually made the exact same amount. And it was at that point that was kind of like a game changer moment where I realized things came together. And from there, I reconcentrated all my energy from 2008 and up, and then we started to climb back up, even during the midst of one of the greatest depressions that we've seen in my generation.
Stan Genetic is no stranger to focus. In fact, the story he's telling is about what amounts to rebranding his excavating and landscaping company, moving from a multi-million-dollar we'll-do-everything business to a more efficient specialty company. It's all about focus. You're listening to Season 2 of the Busy Marketer Podcast. This is the show that offers advice and inspiration for digital marketers in all industries from real-world marketers like you. Together, we cut through the clutter and focus on the important tasks to help you be a better marketer for your business. I'm your host, 17-year digital marketing veteran, BJ Smith. Joining me today is my special guest, Stan Genetic. Welcome to the show, Stan.
BJ, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fabulous today. Let's talk about Stan a little bit. Stan grew up in the country and has been working in the excavation and landscaping industry since he was 13. Don't tell the Department of Labor. He moved to the Twin Cities metropolitan area and paid his way through college the only way he knew how, by running a landscaping crew. Stan quickly built this up from nothing into one of the largest specialty companies in the Midwest and has now refocused his energy into helping others do the same. Stan is a fellow podcaster. He runs the Landscape Business Pro podcast, a program dedicated to finding experts from around the world and bringing their knowledge to help contractors everywhere build a better business. Stan, again, welcome to the show.
BJ, thank you for having me on today. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit more about your company and how you grew it to become the business that it is today?
Well, BJ, I started out growing up, like you said, back in the country, basically started with nothing and built it up to running, you know, five crews. We probably were doing at our peak somewhere just under $2 million a year. And I realized at that point that it really wasn't about the size of the company as it, the most important thing was about the margins in the company. And so in 2007, BJ, I actually made a conscious effort. I sat down with my main guys in my organization and I said, we're going to shrink the company by about 50%. And everybody looked at me like I was crazy. And they're like, well, what are you talking about? I says, our quality isn't there anymore. Our profit margins are suffering. We're all over the board. We need to refine our business process. And of course, this happened to be, it's just out of sheer luck, BJ. It had absolutely nothing to do with being able to predict the upcoming economic downturn that was going to collapse a lot of companies in 2008.
Yeah.
So just by sheer luck, we scaled down by 50%. And then the economy helped us scale down by another 10 or 15% beyond that. So we actually shrunk a little more than what we wanted to, but it really was a blessing in disguise.
Stan went on to tell me about how difficult of a decision it was. The thought of taking your company from $2 million in sales each year to less than half that would be terrifying for most companies. But for him, it was about efficiency and reputation. And like you heard at the beginning of the episode, his company's profits were exactly the same. So what does that get you?
We were able to still concentrate, gain profits, and build a company up and keep it stronger while other companies were collapsing around us.
So you focused on your core areas of expertise?
I did. I called it specialized diversification, the being the jack of all trades and master of two. Okay. You know, the typical scenario is jack of all trades, master of none. And that works exceedingly well in our industry, where when you're in landscaping, contracting, excavating, I don't care what kind of tradesman or craftsman that you are, you have to be able to do just about everything. But what I say is you need to focus on two areas and dominate those areas.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, let's talk about how you've taken the lessons that you've learned and you've started to help other businesses.
I love it, BJ. So you had a story. Can you tell us a little bit about your story about your neighbor?
Absolutely. So my folks have a neighbor. His name's Mark, and he is a great guy. He does so much for my family that, you know, I can never repay him. But he has his own landscape business, and I'm pretty sure he does everything for himself. There are so many people out there that have a truck, a trailer, and some equipment and are competing for the same business. So what advice would you give to people like Mark to help them out and help them stand out from the crowd?
I absolutely love that question, BJ. Establish credibility. You can make yourself look like a company that's been around for 3 years, and you may have only been in existence for 3 days. There's simple tools that many people don't understand, but have a huge impact in the customer's perception. It's not about what you think is the owner of the company. It's about what your customer perceives you to be. The first thing I'm going to tell you is the simplest thing. Get incorporated. Get your LLC or your INC. Now, we don't care about the legal ramifications, although there's many benefits to being incorporated. Really, what you're searching for is those three little letters behind your name. Okay. Those three letters, INC or LLC, have instant verification that you're a company, you're an established business that's been around for a while. When you're lacking those names, you leave the impression that you're a mom or a pop organization. And there's nothing wrong with that, but if you're trying to gain the notoriety that comes with it, establishing credibility quickly, that is one of the simplest, easiest things to do.
So you want to look like you're a legitimate business rather than maybe a step above the 15-year-old who's using his daddy's weed eater.
Exactly. Another way to establish credibility, BJ, is to borrow credibility. And so there are companies out there that have been around forever and ever. Better Business Bureau is one of them. Become a member of the Better Business Bureau. Now, there is a fee to that, and I consider becoming a member of the Better Business Bureau not only a step toward establishing credibility, but it is also part of the advertising campaign that contractors can participate in. But what happens is when you become a member of the Better Business Bureau, you're allowed to use their logo. You're allowed to use that logo, which everybody recognizes as an authority in the market. You're allowed to stick that stamp everywhere you go.
You know, Stan, as a matter of fact, I was just having a conversation with a friend. He's looking at rebuilding his website, and he's trying to step it up in the industry. Now, he is actually very well known in the area. He's not a landscaper, not in the contract business. His website, you know, he's been around since 1994. So he is very well established in the community, and he's looking to expand out. And I looked and I was like, if you look at the Better Business Bureau's website, you have an A-plus rating. Flaunt it. You know, we need to get that out there. So yeah, I can absolutely agree with jumping in and getting some credibility from the Better Business Bureau.
Social influence. The Better Business Bureau is part of that key component. You got to look good to everybody else. And then new people coming in will go, hey, these 100,000 people or however many people, I don't care if it's 100 in your local neighborhood or these 1,000 within the a county area, they all think this guy is the bomb diggity. And if they are backing this guy, then there must be that level of trust. So the Better Business Bureau helps establish it. Another one is your local chamber of commerce. That's another great resource you can use. And they oftentimes, remember, it's not just about the resources and connections you can make there, but this is part of borrowing credibility from other organizations. When you become a member of a different organization, you borrow their authority in the marketplace.
This is third-party validation.
Exactly. And you can attach that to your websites as well. You know, a website really isn't a website unless it has some social proof to it, BJ. You know, whether that's a Facebook fan page attached to it, a LinkedIn profile, all those little tiny what do you call them? Postmarks in the side of a website. You're the media market master. I do landscaping for a living. Those tags of social proof are important to establishing your credibility.
One of the nice things about Facebook is that it allows people to, if you're established as a location business, it allows people to go in there and actually rate your business, which is another form of validation that you can use.
So if we're going to go down that path of Facebook versus website, you really got to have a great website. I'm sure everybody that's tuning into your program knows that, BJ. But one of the things I'd like to do is I'd like to set that website up as, here's my storefront, and then here's my Facebook connection where I can upload instantly new information without going through a web developer, without going through a web host, without going through a web programmer. Hey, here's my pictures of the day, even if I'm out in the field. Hey, check out this before, and here's what I'm doing right now. And tomorrow I'm going to post new updates, and you can actually kind of have a live interaction with people as they follow along. It's an incredible format to keeping people up to date minute by minute, day by day.
What are your thoughts on visual mediums like using Instagram or Pinterest or something like that?
That's awesome, because I have no thoughts on those.
Surprise question.
I honestly don't know anything about it. It's on my radar screen, but I got to focus on what I do very well. And so I can't do too many things and think I'm going to be very good at them. One of the things that I do like to do is YouTube videos. I found those to be hyper impactful. Customers love seeing jobs, even if you're not the best at the YouTube videos. Customers just love that it's easy to link up to, send a link to your customers. Here's how we did it. And use those YouTube videos as well as just as a huge impact on search engine optimization.
Let's back up a little bit. Since you're talking about YouTube videos, you've kind of made a name for yourself with your YouTube video and sort of set an industry standard with the pool demolition.
Well, BJ, it was a lesson a long time coming. So it really is not the best videos. I found that, although they're not professionally done, I get the information across, and that's really what people are looking for. If they really want a high quality program, they'll turn on ABC or NBC. They're not going to go to YouTube. But when they need the information and they need to know that you can complete the project, it's an awesome way to go, hey, here I am doing it right now. Here's what I know about it. Here it is in process, and here it is all wrapped up.
Let's focus on our guy, Mark. So what kind of videos, if he was going to try to incorporate YouTube videos, what sort of videos would you recommend he create?
Before and after. Let's focus on, here I am coming into the job site. Use some personality. Use some charisma in it. Don't be a talking head that is very monotone and hold the camera at one angle. You know what? Let your personality come through. People love personality. And when you show your personality, they kind of get an idea of who they're going to be dealing with when you show up at the job. It's a great way to get them more comfortable with your company. And you oftentimes, if you can do a video and you can do it very well, sometimes the job will be sold before you even show up. They'll be convinced just through the information that you relate on your website about your authority in the market. And a lot of times it's less about price, especially when it comes to contracting, craftsmen, tradesmen, landscapers, people that do what we do. And it's about making the customer feel comfortable. They don't know what's going on. They don't have a clue how to do these things. They want somebody they can believe in. And oftentimes, tradesmen are not very good at dealing with people. They specialize on just doing phenomenal work. Just, I'm the best at what I do, but I don't know how to treat the customer like that. Instead, I'm going to tell you, treat the customer like they're the absolute best thing. And even if you're only mediocre at your work, they're going to love you for making them feel special.
What sort of equipment do you use when you're shooting video?
I use an iPhone.
Any special mics, or do you just use the onboard?
I use the onboard mic. Like I said, I am in my infancy with learning YouTube videos. I wish I had some great insight for you. I have a friend, Keith Kalfast from the Landscape Employee Trap. He shoots some phenomenal videos. And I've actually literally learned everything I know about videos just by watching his videos. And it's just all about personality and just trying to relate a message and connecting with your audience.
You're absolutely right. When the content is valuable to the customer, to the viewer, then they're willing to overlook the fact that it may not be professionally shot video. They know that what you're showing them is important information to them. You know, this is what I'm looking for. I'm looking to do this sort of work to my yard. You know, we talked about the pool removal things. It could be building a fire pit or, you know, you're the landscape guy. So you kind of help me out and the different types of projects that people would want to have. But think about what's going on in your area. Think about your area regionally. I was actually lucky enough to be on Stan's podcast where we talked about Facebook a little bit. And one of the things that really popped in my head when we were talking is that, you know, in my area where I live in the eastern part of North Carolina, everybody has centipede grass. And I hate the stuff personally, but for some reason it's always there. Everybody's got it. And it would be nice to know the best ways to care for it, you know, and show me based on my area how I need to care for it. Because the way I care for grass in eastern North Carolina is completely different than somebody who's caring for grass in Maine or Minnesota, right?
Exactly. Now, BJ, not everybody's going to feel comfortable in front of a camera. In fact, few people really are. You got to have a little bit of a narcissistic element to you, I believe. But that's part of the fun, which makes each and every one of us unique. But a picture literally says 1,000 words. Pop your eye candy up on your website. And if you want to talk about centipede grass, show a yard with a before picture just infested with centipede grass. Just a picture, just boom, boom. And then do bullet points. Don't inundate the people on your website with this long text that's like a dry documentary that you got to read through. Right. What you really want to do is you want the bullet points. Here's the 5 big points how you correct centipede grass. And then have an after picture of the same yard where you have actually done this. Boom, you're an instant authority. Another way to gain that credibility, BJ, is to become a member of Angie's List. Now, one of the things that Angie's List, they hype this up, and I want to be very clear to people just getting into it, contractors who may not understand the process, but there is a clear process with Angie's List, and you need to be aware of it. Yes, you cannot pay to be on Angie's List, okay? You just can't. But as soon as anybody, don't do it yourself, but as soon as any of your customers give you, I think it's 2 reviews on Angie's List, you're in their system and you're on their radar screen. And what that means is if you're the contractor, your phone's going to be going ding-a-ling-a-ling from the Angie's List representatives wanting you to advertise on Angie's List. Angie's List is a multimillionaire, probably. I don't know. Don't quote me on that, but I'm guessing she is. Because as a contractor that has 2 reviews, you now have the option to advertise on Angie's List. And it can be powerful or it can be a flop. But be careful. Be ready. When those service people call or sales people call from Angie's List to ask you if you want to optimize, and that's kind of what they do. And I'm doing air quotes here right now, BJ.
I can imagine it.
When you want to optimize your listing on Angie's List, that what they do is they take your reviews, and whether you got 1 or 2, then they pull out maybe this is literally how they can do it. This guy was awesome at botching up my job. So what they'll do is doesn't sound like a very good review, right?
Right.
But they'll highlight in giant letters, this guy was awesome if you pay him enough money. And then they'll put in little tiny letters at botching up and then big letters, my job. Okay. So it's a little bit, I'm not going to be the one to say, you know, hey, I think it could be done better. But if you're getting that gist, then that's the way many contractors in the industry feel. And when I say be prepared when they call you, get ready to put on your negotiating hat. Here's my personal story about Angie's List. I was actually really against advertising on this medium. And I sat down with a tree company that's a local in the neighborhood. And he told me that's the only way he gets work. Wow. Okay. He gets work no other way than through Angie's List. I'm like, well, all right, next time they call me, I'll negotiate. But it goes against my principles to pay for advertising on something that you're not supposed to be able to pay to get on Angie's List. But there's a difference there. Can't pay to get on it, but once you're there, boy, they'll bleed you dry. So, and I want contractors out there to know this so they can be prepared when it comes to the negotiating part of it. The opening round of negotiations with Angie's List was, I got the phone call. I'm driving down 494 in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. I'm really, you know, I'm not in a very good mood because I know that I need to do this, but it's kind of against my core principles. The salesperson offers me to advertise on Angie's List at $33,000 a year.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. And I laughed and I said, and in my mind, I'm like, this conversation's not going to go very far. So let's have some fun with it. So in my cocky way that I can oftentimes be, unfortunately, I said, okay, take that number, divide it by half, and then take that number and divide it by half, and then take that number and divide it by half, and then take that number and divide it by half, and then maybe we'll talk. So we went from $33,000 down to about $3,300 for the same coverage.
That's ridiculous.
For the same advertising campaign. And it's been extremely effective. I tell you what, I get so much work from Angie's List, but it's just stories like that. If you're not ready to negotiate on that, Angie's List would have never paid for itself for me. And there's contractors that don't know how much and how hardcore you can negotiate with them. And then they just agree to it. And in turn, it doesn't pay for itself. So I want you guys, your new guys out there, to negotiate. Angie's List is a huge tool. It's used by many people. It establishes credibility in the market. It's part of the advertising campaign. But just get ready. Strap in, because you need to get the right numbers for your company. Don't just say yes because that's what they tell you have to do.
Perfect. Perfect. You know, doing a quality job is obviously, it should be a given. And I think there are a lot of folks out there, and I think this is one of the ways that you're going to beat the guy who's just, just grabbing his truck and his lawnmower and heading out and knocking on doors, standing out. And when you get those ratings on Angie's List, that is a huge part of your marketing process. You know, not only are you getting the word of mouth, but you want the positive reviews as well. Let me ask you something, Stan. Have you ever run into or have worked with anybody that's run into reviews with Yelp?
I'm not familiar with Yelp. I have heard of it. I am familiar with Google reviews. I think those are very powerful. That's more of a very localized review system, if I'm correct on this, BJ. Is that right? Is Google like hyper-localized within a neighborhood or area?
When you do a search result, your search, Google knows where you are, essentially. And they know what you've looked in other websites that you've been to or have been to through Google. And so it focuses the search results based on so many different criteria. And if you're, let's say you have a Google Plus page, and I think that that's something that every local business should have is a Google Plus page. Even if you aren't posting to it, you need to have one. That is a place where folks can leave reviews based on their experience with you. And yes, so when you do a search locally, you're hopefully in what's called the graph box on the right-hand side will appear and hopefully have your business information in there and give you some star ratings and things like that as well. So yeah, Google reviews is definitely a good thing to have.
And I've noticed that I've done as much work as a landscaper can do to develop my Google reviews, and it's paid off. I get a lot of work locally because of it. One of the other things that to help stand out is the name of your company, BJ. You've got to be really careful. Like, let's go back to Mark's company, okay? Sure. Let's just say his name is Mark Applewood. I don't know what his name is. Now, if he's going to get started, he needs to have a company name. And a lot of beginners fall into the trap of calling their company something along the lines of Excelsior Exteriors or, High Quality Craftsman or, you know, anything that screams, you know, I'm trying to relate quality only through my name. And what it says to the customers out there is that a lot of guys are doing that. You're not really differentiating yourself in the marketplace at all. If your name is Mark Applewood, why don't you try Applewood Landscaping Incorporated. It has a little bit of character. It has a unique flavor to it. Okay. And it kind of stands out from everyone else. Your work, once you get them at least peaked enough to look into what you do, that's when you nail down your work to prove that you provide quality services. You got your before and afters. You've established credibility in the marketplace by connecting with authorities already through the Better Business Bureau, getting your Angie's List review, getting your Google reviews. And so you just want to make sure that your name does not get confused with what seems to be everybody else's name out in the marketplace. Another thing to do too is, that first impression is really important. So you want to have that cohesive logo or brand, not only through your website, but through your personal appearance. So when you pull up to a job site and you're that new guy just getting started, you don't have to have a perfect vehicle, but don't pull up in a rusted out old junker. That is just, you got 7 seconds to make that first impression. Now, I've pulled up to job sites in a Chevy Corvette, a Dodge Aveo, a Dodge minivan, a Dodge Charger, a Ford Mustang, a Pontiac Grand Prix. All of them were clean. All of them looked like they were well-maintained. Didn't make a difference what the cars were. In fact, I kind of use like some of the sports cars as a way of opening my icebreaker. A lot of people will ask you, well, when you pull up in a Ford Mustang or a Chevy Corvette, well, I was expecting you to pull up in a pickup truck. And then that kind of helps you open the door to have a response like, well, you know what? The trucks are out pulling skid loaders. They're hauling blocks. They're towing sod around to job sites. Although this is, a little flashy and a little fancy, it still gets better miles per gallon than, my diesel pickup truck, which gets me 8 miles per gallon. And all I carry around is the paperwork to line up the meetings. And so then you've got to have that automated response, and it doesn't matter what kind of car you have. It's just as long as it's something that's clean and appropriate. And then you also want to look, your personal appearance is almost as important as anything else. Cause like I said, we got that first 7 seconds, BJ.
Right.
Have a company shirt. It can be a t-shirt. Now we're craftsmen, tradesmen, landscapers. A t-shirt is fine. I prefer button-up collars. Just that loose button-up collar. It doesn't have to be a complete button-down shirt, just sure. Something with a collar.
Nice polo.
Yeah. And it just, with your company name on it, it just says, I am more of, I'm not just working in the fields. I do both. I'm more of the face of the company, so to speak. Apologize for my stuttering there for a moment. But I'm the face of the company, and this is my job. Now, I want to talk about cleanliness. You don't have to be clean. That's what I love about our industry.
Okay. I can't wait to hear this one.
Don't step out of the car with mustard splattered all over your shirt. That's being a slob. But if you step out of the car and your boots are dirty and you're dusty, you know what that says to the customer? This is a working man. This is the guy I want. This is not a guy that just sits in the office. If you step out of that car and you have a dress shirt on and a tie, get out of town. You're not an investment banker. You're a tradesman. Learn to dress appropriately. So just be just have the right clothing. You're going to make the right impression. And that's huge to allowing the rest of your message to come through.
Fabulous. Fabulous. These are all great tips. Is there anything else you want to share with Mark and the rest of the guys out there?
Where do I start, BJ?
I am taking you down the wrong road again.
yes, that is. If we're really going to get started, do we want to focus on equipment, or do we want to focus on what we talked about earlier and tie that back to the specialized diversification?
The specialized diversification for many folks who are listening here, not just their contractors, I think it's something that a lot of folks need to hear. So let's talk a little bit more about that.
So we'll go back to my opening salvo where I related my story in 2007, where we were running 5 crews, doing, millions of dollars a year in business and not making any profits because we were the jack of all trades and we were the master of none at that point. When we consciously made an effort to downsize, we also consciously made an effort to refocus our company and to do what I call that specialized diversification, or becoming the jack of all trades and master of two. Now, I say two very specifically because I want you to dominate two specific areas within your trade. Not one, but two. Two gives you a little bit of leeway in case of a downturn in the market. Markets tend to shift. They tend to ebb and flow. And so if you have two areas that you're highly specialized in, and everybody can do two things really well, okay? BJ, you're a college professor and you do podcasting. You do two things very well. Am I correct at that?
I hope so.
Okay, perfect. I do podcasting and I run an excavating company. That's my two things, okay? So for our excavating company, what we said we're going to do is we're going to boil those two niches down, but we're going to do it strategically. So we're going to have one super hyper specialized niche that very few people even know exists. In our case, it was pool demolition. Okay. Not pool installation, not pool remodeling. If you want your pool taken out, you call us. If you want your pool fixed, you go ahead and call somebody else because I'm not going to do it. The way I fix it is by coming in and smashing it up into little pieces and hauling it away. And once we were able to quickly dominate that market, we were able to quickly establish credibility because even though we serve a large area with a ton of competition, very few people focused on removing swimming pools. In fact, within the Twin Cities metropolitan area, there may be somewhere between 500 and 1,000 excavating and landscaping companies, and there's only one other one that specializes in removing swimming pools. And so the competition was very little, but, and you would think to yourself, well, you know, what kind of market could there be in just doing something so specialized? When you become the leader in the industry, you will be getting jobs from all over the place. Right now, because we focused on that, I get calls from Nevada. I can't go out to Nevada and remove a swimming pool. I have a company in California that sends me job leads because they're called Pool It Out, and they specialize in removing swimming pools, and people from Minnesota find their website and they refer them back to us. So I get calls all over the place.
Great.
And so at this point, I have one crew that does nothing but goes from swimming pool removal project to swimming pool removal project. And it has taken me years to understand that when we remove a swimming pool, we do it in a super specialized fashion. We have an exact set of procedures that we put in place. And because we do that, we can also offer flat rate pricing. I price removing a swimming pool over the phone. That way, I know when the customer has me out to their site, they already have a general idea of what it costs. And I put a few caveats in there. I put a few, you know, it's got to meet these standards before we do it. But there's no mystery. I'm not going out to a job site and having the customer go, well, I thought removing a swimming pool is going to cost me $500 when really it costs like $5,000. You don't have that wasted time at that point. You've dominated the market, and it's an easy market to dominate because of the lack of competition. That's one niche. So whatever you do, pick one highly specialized niche and go for it. Dominate it however you feel necessary to become the leading expert in that field. And then on the secondary niche, make it a broader category, something that is going to have more appeal to a wider audience and focus in on that. Now, in my company's example, we focused on retaining wall installation. Now, almost every excavator and landscaper in the Twin Cities can do retaining wall installation. They advertise for it. They put it. So you've got to learn how to differentiate yourself from all those other guys that are doing it. And we've done that by focusing on the structural end of it, something that although technically most companies can install retaining walls, when you get over 4 feet tall, there is a huge learning curve. Hmm. And so to dominate that learning curve, we take the right classes. We let people know that we're an authority in the market. Here's the retaining walls over 4 feet we've done. Here's the retaining walls over 20 feet we've done. Here's the retaining walls that are double tiered on top of a ski slope. Here's a 14-foot tall wall holding up an 11-foot tall wall holding up a million-dollar mansion at the top of a ski slope that we've done, okay? And you put those pictures in place, and then that makes customers feel comfortable that if you can do this retaining wall that, you know, is holding up a million-dollar home, you can probably easily do the 5-foot retaining wall in my backyard that holds up my apple tree.
Exactly. And now we can actually take these lessons and we can apply that to our marketing strategy as well, because one of the questions that I typically ask at the end of each show to our guests, and I may or may not ask you this, I'm not sure yet, but if you could use only three social media platforms, which would you choose? And it's, I'll probably not ask you this because I'm going to tell you, it's kind of a trick question. And most folks will tell me two, some will tell me a third. But the reason I ask that question is that I don't believe that you can do social media well if you're trying to do it all, because there are so many gurus out there who'll come out there and say, oh, you've got to have a Pinterest site, you have to have Instagram, you have to do Facebook, Twitter, and everything else under the rainbow. When something new comes out, if there's Snapchat, they think you need to do Snapchat. And that is absolutely not the case, because if you try to do everything, you're not going to do anything well. And I believe that you need to focus on, like you said, one or two actually key areas that you can do well, that you're inspired by, and that will work for your business, and just knock those out of the park.
And that's exactly the same thing that I'm talking about, BJ. So if we go back, we can use your example where you asked me about Pinterest and Snapchat or whatever it was, BJ. And I don't know about those. I do want to get familiar with them. It goes back to being the jack of all trades. You have to have a level of familiarity with everything we do. Is, you know, in landscaping, we've got to be able to go out and grade yards, be able to dig a basement, be able to do, you know, whatever it is, plant flowers in a bed, install mulch. You've got to be able to do the basics,
right?
Because if your specialty isn't there, if the special jobs that you're really, really good at, where you know your profit margins are exact, if those jobs don't come in, you can fall back on the others. So you do need a level of familiarity with everything out there, but you don't have to be an expert in it. So if I was going to attempt to answer your question as far as social media goes, BJ, I'm not really a social media guru or expert by any means, but the things that I focus on is developing a website that is top-notch, because for landscapers, tradesmen, that really is important. Our website can be more important than our brick and mortar store because it has a larger audience. So a brick and mortar store is limited to your local neighborhood. Your website is limited to your local city, or however, it's technically not limited, okay?
Right.
So developing that, which isn't a social media platform, but it's still web-based information. And then personally, what I like to do is I'm trying to become better at YouTube videos because I find them impactful. I find them an easy way to, you know, get your message across to people that are searching for something very specific. And you can do a YouTube video good and you can do it bad. And I've done both. So, you know, that's where I focus on that. And then just having enough information out there, so when other people are hitting those different resources, it will at least give them enough information to find and locate my company. And I think a lot of companies need to just have enough fingers or feelers out there so that you can bring them back to the areas where you're really strong. In fact, one of the things that I like to talk about is when you focus on building up your weakness, you become mediocre at best. But when you focus on building upon your strength, you dominate your market.
Excellent. I love that. Stan, I have one more question about the marketing side for the contractors and the folks who are listening. And then we're going to move into our next segment. What I want to know is about your website. So when you get visitors to your website, what call to action, what do you want them to do? Do you want them to submit a quote request? Do you want them to pick up the phone? How's your website set up?
That's a great question, BJ. Now, as landscapers, we have the blessing of being able to have way more work than we can ever handle. Most companies that are good at what they do will book out 5 to 6 months. So what that also means is we unfortunately don't have to have a hyper strong call to action. We don't have to really nail it down. We don't have to drive home that message and hit them 5 or 6 different places. In fact, if people can't reach me sometimes, I'm okay, because literally we can't return all the phone calls and do all the projects that come our way. So we simply have a lot of information. We show customers what we can do, and then we have our phone number listed on the website, as well as an email contact form that they can send in if they don't want to pick up the phone. And if they're just looking for some generalized information, they can email us. And I love the email because it allows me to answer some very to-the-point questions. So if they're looking at, you know, how far out are you booked? Can you build this retaining wall? I'm in such and such an area. Do you service this area? And that may take me 3 minutes to answer those questions instead of engaging them in a conversation where they may have a lot of questions that have absolutely nothing to do with their project. And now I've spent 15 or 20 minutes where an email allows me to answer and get straight to the point. So I love that. And so my website is just mainly focused on let's get them the bare minimum that they need to make sure that they can reach us.
Before we jump into our next segment, I want to remind you that this episode of The Busy Marketer is brought to you by Marketing Recap, hashtag MRCAP. Marketing Recap is a show I host with Cynthia Johnson and Blake Jameson, where we get together and talk about the most interesting digital marketing stories of the week. We give you our thoughts about the stories and what they mean for your business. Here's a clip from a recent episode.
And that was super helpful for me when I was building Facebook strategies for companies like Pool Supply World, who has 100,000 fans, or I worked with another company called Design by Humans, who at the time had about 350,000 fans. In both cases, real fans. We paid for advertising. We got real people. It wasn't uncommon for posts to get back then in the hundreds or thousands of engagements. But what was really interesting is to then go and look at the negative engagements, because you didn't really ever see that unless you really dug for it. But that was some of the most telling information where, you know, I might make a post. It seems like it just kind of does meh, average, didn't get the most likes, didn't get the least, it's whatever. But then I go into my analytics and I see, holy crap, like this post alone made 30 people unsubscribe from my page. That content, you know, it might look mediocre in terms of people talking about this, which was, you know, the hot word when people realized likes weren't that important. So to see that transferred and made more transparent and easy to find, I think is great news. Boom.
Tim says, I never hide Blake Jameson's Facebook posts. So you can learn more about the show, including how to interact with us live, by visiting marketingrecap.com. Regular listeners of the Busy Marketer podcast know what's coming next, and I know you've been waiting for it. This is our bonding time, the group therapy session. I call it that because when I get together with other marketers and at conferences and other events, we always share our stories of struggles and accomplishments. We give each other advice and lend an ear to those needing to vent. Group therapy. Now it's Stan's turn to join us for a session. This is the time where our listeners get to benefit from learning from your other experiences. So, Stan, welcome to the group therapy session.
Okay, let's get it on like Donkey Kong.
All right, are you sitting on your couch?
I'm sitting head back, feet up.
Right? There you go. I believe most successes are the result of lessons that are learned from trial and error, and that the past mistakes that we've made, those are like little gems that help us to grow. So I want you to tell us a story about a time when things didn't work out exactly as planned. So tell us a failure and what you learned from it.
Okay, which day of the week do you want to talk about, BJ? Running a business is a lesson every single day.
Yes, okay? It is.
You're going to have challenges. You're going to have things that come up. When you own the company, you are the chief firefighter, and every issue, every problem is going to come your way. So the first and foremost thing that you can do as that leader is to stay calm, stay positive. You never see strong leaders losing it. Anytime a strong leader loses it, not only do they, I don't know, they lose a little bit of respect from their organization, they lose a little bit of respect from themselves. So if you as a leader are facing those difficulties, facing those challenges, you can't let it show. You don't relate the negative components of your job, of your business, to the rest of your crew. It's up to you to stay encouraging, to stay strong. Now, when we cut back in 2007, we had a hard road to face. We knew that we weren't gaining the profits that we wanted, and we talked about how we cut back the business, but what we didn't talk about is how we cut back the people.
Right.
Okay. So that is part of the equation. It's hard to let people go. One of the things that I value about people is a lot of guys, especially doing what we do, place their personal value on the fact that they have a job. Some people out there feel like if they're not employed, they're not worthy. It's just a hard hit.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I feel as well. Okay. And so the easiest way for guys to be valuable is just to be that go-to person with that positive attitude, the go-getter, that when he's on the job, he's focused and concentrated. And that's what we looked for when we were cutting back people. We said, who do we want to keep and who do we have to let go? Part of it was not just skills. Okay, guys and gals out there, you don't have to have the most skills. you don't have to put the most effort into it. It's a combination of three factors. You got to have a good attitude. An attitude goes a long way. That attitude of gratitude, the attitude that takes you everywhere, is the most important thing. And then your skills will develop from there. But if a boss or a leader or a manager can look at a person and know when they ask him something that they're going to get a response, it doesn't even have to be a happy response. You don't have to be jumping for joy because they ask you to go rake leaves. But if they know that that person's willing to do it and is going to be there consistently on a day-by-day basis, that's huge for what we do, BJ.
Right.
It's just a major hurdle that a lot of guys, you know, right now face, because they've gotten this mind frame where it's the instant gratification. It's the Facebook millionaires or whatever they are, you know, the web developed millionaires, and that's where they should be. You know, a lot of guys don't understand, and gals out there don't understand, that success is often overlooked because it's disguised as hard work. You got to get up at 5 o'clock every morning, put your boots on, and get the job done.
Yeah. And, you know, let's talk to some of the younger folks out there. Since, I mean, this, let me jump up on my soapbox for just a second here. There are so many folks out there who are graduating college and they expect that they're going to start with their dream job, and they don't understand that they have to get out there. They have to get in the trenches. They have to work. They have to do the things that aren't in their job description to, you know, to make it to the next level. Yeah, I think when I'm looking for employees or contractors or things like that, that is definitely one of the things that I like to look for, is make sure that they aren't feeling entitled, that they know that they have to work to, you know, get to where they want to be.
Yeah, there was a college graduate fresh out of college, went to an engineering firm, and he says, you know, I'd like a job. I'd like to make $125,000 a year and have paid vacation. And the manager looked at him and said, well, would you also like 5 weeks paid vacation, full benefit package, 50% matching income at the end of retirement, and a red Corvette to drive? And the fresh student looked at him and said, really? And the guy said, no, I'm just messing with you, but you started it.
Perfect.
So you got to have realistic expectations, and those don't come to fruition overnight. You know, really, you've got to put the time in, and you've got to be able to get out there and do it. And you know, managers notice it. They recognize it. And if they don't, then you start to look. But the grass isn't always greener 3 weeks after you start a project. I see that happen too many times. 3 weeks, 3 months, or even a year down the road, guys are like, oh, you know, I think I could get a better job over here, when they're just getting to the point where they should be promoted. But on the other hand, if the management isn't recognizing you, then you need to understand that as well. So there's that fine tipping point that makes the difference between, you know, success and failure, or going from one dead-end job to another dead-end job. And that's one of the things I love about landscaping. I really want to hit the nail on the head, is if you're just getting started, it is an entry-level job that almost anybody can do. But it's also limitless. You have the capability of taking a landscaping company and running it and growing it to a $5, $10, or $15 million a year corporation. Okay? There is tons of money that can be made in landscaping when you go from doing it part-time to doing it as your full-time gig that you're willing to put the energy and effort into. I have actually seen business entrepreneurs that have already achieved success, have already made millions of dollars, invest in landscaping companies because they thought it would be a loss, so they wanted a tax write-off.
Right.
And then they realize that there's a lot of money that can be made, and they end up buying a larger percentage of the company out because they want to own it. I personally know companies around the Twin Cities that have done exactly that. And that tells me, and that tells you, that if you're just starting out, if you're willing to put the time and energy and effort into it, you can become that person. Your company can become anything you want it to be. And the beauty is, you can start with a pickup truck, you can start with a shovel, and start with your determination in place, and you can build it from there. That's how I started. I had absolutely nothing.
That is a exact reason why you guys need to be listening to Stan. And please go check out his podcast, the Landscape Business Pro podcast. It is going to be chock full of great pieces of information. And I wasn't expecting to plug that right now, but that just kind of falls right into what you're talking about. I mean, because you've got such great information, and there's so many different things that that folks can learn. As a matter of fact, before I was on your show, I listened to a few episodes, and there were people up there who were speaking to any kind of entrepreneur. So there is great pieces of information on there. It's not just, you're not actually talking about the physical work of doing landscaping, but you're talking about becoming that business.
Yes, I try not to focus just on the skill acquisition. I think that the skill acquisition comes from being out in the field, but it's the business acquisition that's more important to running a successful company. So in my program, and I don't mean to plug it, BJ, but I want to make sure that people understand exactly what we do. If you want to learn how to build a retaining wall, you go to my YouTube channel. I actually walk you through the process, not how to build it, but how to bid it. But on the podcast, what I look for is entrepreneurs, successful people, and bring them in. And it's going to be some people that you, as a contractor, when you tune into the program, you should be asking yourself, why the heck does this guy have him on? A good example is my John Gray. This is the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And I'd love to use this as an example. You should be asking yourself, why would Stan have a relationship expert on a show about contractors? What many people don't understand is this guy cured himself of Parkinson's, which is a killer disease. He's like the Lance Armstrong of Parkinson's. Yeah. And this guy's amazing journey is something that we can apply specifically to our businesses. And how that happens is the fact that John Gray went down to Mexico, sat in a dirty little room with a bunch of guys coming off from cocaine, heroin, hooked himself up to IVs because he couldn't get treated in the United States, cured himself of Parkinson's. The symptoms came back. He went back down there, hooked himself back up and said to himself, I can't afford to keep doing this. He found a natural way to cure himself of the disease. But in the process, he learned how to become hyper-focused. And what are entrepreneurs? What are we? We are distracted. We are those people that are juggling way too many things all at once. We got so many balls in the air, we can't do any of them efficiently. But if you can learn simple ways to concentrate, simple techniques, I think what he recommends is a combination of vitamin C and grapeseed extract. I don't remember the exact combo, but that was one of his tricks.
That and some minerals.
And I use his minerals. After his program, I went and I bought all this stuff, and I absolutely love it. And I found that I can now focus on one task and complete it. If you're driving down the road right now, if you're listening to this podcast and you have a to-do list that's 5, 10, 15 things long, you're distracted. You're not giving yourself the opportunity to complete any one thing. When you can focus and concentrate, you can prioritize your to-do list. You can complete the tasks in a timely fashion. Concentrate only on the things that need to be done and understand how that works. So that's why I had a guest like John Gray on. Without John Gray, I would have never understood that. We have other guys on there, all different areas. And my job is to take these experts from out there, wherever they may be doing, and to focus what they know and apply it directly like a big old Band-Aid over landscaping and contracting. So whatever it is, you know, all the rest of the stuff can fall by the wayside that they do. I don't care about that. It can be an interesting story. Great. But the end of the program, if you're a landscaper or a contractor, you're tuning in, you better have learned something more than when you went into the program. When you tune out, you know more than when you tuned in, is what I'm trying to say.
That's right. And I listened to that episode that you were just talking about. I thought it was great. I got so much out of it. And actually, as he was talking, and he was talking about all the different things people focus on, I had my iPad in my lap listening. I had my iPhone next to me. I was looking at Twitter or something else. And I had a notepad next to me. And as he was talking, I'm like, he's talking to me. You know, I'm the guy he's talking about. I had to put everything down and just focus on listening to what he was having to say. Again, it's for more than just contractors. I think a lot of us can get something out of it. Busy marketers, you guys are the ones who are trying to do too much and trying to figure out which paths to take. And there's some great advice in there that will help you out. Stan, you know, I love these stories. And I want to cover one more real quick group therapy session question. You know, we've talked about how you can be more efficient by the specialized diversification. We've talked about failures and having to readjust your company that makes you more efficient and makes you become better. What I want to talk about now is a success. So all these things, all these lessons that we learned can lead to success. Tell us a quick story about one of your favorite successes. It doesn't have to be the most financially rewarding.
Perfect, BJ. Thank you for that. And what I want to talk to you about is a successful advertising campaign, something that not my success, it is my success, but it's something that you can take away with you. You can do this exact same thing, and I call it flexible advertising, BJ. You're a contractor, you're a landscaper, you're in a seasonal occupation. And by seasonal, you may do different things at different times of the year, or let's also define seasonal as there are going to be times when you're so successful, you can't take any more work on. And you have an advertising campaign out there that's costing you money, okay? Or you may be in the exact opposite boat where you need some work. You need an advertising campaign that you can bump up or bump down. You can adjust it on the fly. A lot of advertising campaigns do not allow that. Angie's List does not allow that, because you've got one set negotiated rate, but there are pay per lead services. And these are amazing services for contractors. Now, I don't know what they are in your area, but I use a company called Home Advisor. And I think the other one is Home Service Pro or something like that. And what it is I literally pay between $15 and $30. Sometimes I pay up to $100, believe it or not, just to get the name and number of a customer that has a very specific job. Those more than pay for themselves. If you can have a higher close rate, when I say higher close rate, let's not get mistaken and say you've got to have a 70% close rate. That's not realistic, okay? If you're getting a 70% close rate, come work for me. I need to know your magic,
exactly.
Okay? A realistic close rate will be 10 to 30%. So if you're if each job costs you $20, and so you have $200 and you close one job and it's worth $2,000 or $5,000, you've paid for all the missed opportunities that you didn't get. And my success story, BJ, is I went from doing yellow pages and phone book advertising, which was costing me $5,000 per month. And I had there was no way to adjust it. In fact, I was so busy that I didn't even use it. All the customers that were coming in and I still had to pay $5,000, I was locked in. And I spent $60,000 in advertising 1 year and had absolutely no reason to do any of it because we were focusing all on commercial work that year, because it's the ebb and flow. It's that it kind of moves one way or another, and you're going to get more jobs in one time than you do another time. Some of your advertising will work for you. Some of it won't work for you. But when you have flexible advertising, that pay-per-lead advertising coming in, you can literally shut it down for a month, 2 months, 3 months. If you're booked out 3 months in advance, or 5 or 6 months in advance, shut your advertising down. Don't pay for it. Keep the bare minimum going so your name stays on top of the pile, and then amp it up when you need to.
Perfect. Okay. I'd like you to leave us with a parting thought, a piece of advice to inspire the listeners. How about that?
I love it. Thank you for that. There is something that after, I don't know, I've been in business 20 or 30 years now, BJ. I started when I was 13. I'm 43. It's all I've done, right? Worked my way through college, running landscaping crews. There's something I didn't know until just recently, because I was setting up to meet one of my guests. He was a specialist in tax planning for small businesses, specifically for contractors. And he is my accountant. I absolutely love his services. But because I never engaged him deeper into the conversation, I never knew this was even a possibility. I was sitting in his office doing a pre-show interview planning strategy meeting, and he was talking to me about some of the strategies that can help small businesses prepare for the upcoming tax season. Now, this is something that absolutely changed the way I look at business. Turn your taxes in November. If your fiscal year ends December 31st, if that's the drop-off date for you, then you have to have everything done. Turn them in November, November 1st. What that does is that gives you 8 weeks to plan accordingly. There's no mystery. It's called being proactive, not reactive. If you turn in your taxes after December 31st, you're locked into whatever your your account balances were, whatever your spending expenses and income was during that year. If you turn your taxes in November 1st, although it won't be an official report, you can put a plan in place with your accountant to make up the difference, whatever you have to do to adjust accordingly. So when December 31st rolls around, you know exactly where your taxes are going to be. You don't have to sweat it. Did I make that clear, BJ, or should I go into more detail on that?
So you're actually talking about you're going to have everything set up, and we're talking about taxes that you owe?
No, sir. So, I'm talking about in fiscal year 2014.
Right.
Your end of year ends December 31st. Yes. November 2014, you put your budget together, you account for all of your expenses to that point, you account for all of your income to that point, you turn it in. And that gives you kind of a way of gauging where you're going to be at when December 31st rolls around. So if you happen to have, if you follow BJ's advice, if you follow my advice, you should be making a ton of money.
Yes.
Which means you have the ability to go out and buy more equipment, because anything that's pure profit is going to be hit at a 30% or more.
Okay, I'm with you now.
Tax rate. So if you have 8 weeks and you go, you know what, my company looks like it's going to make this amount in profit, but if I go out and buy some equipment or I buy something appropriate for my business, I can knock my total income down a little bit, which will help with my taxes at the end of the year. It's just pre-tax planning, and it's huge. Now, I'm not an accountant, and I'm going to ask you to make sure you check with your local certified accountant to make sure this works for you. But I absolutely love this concept. I don't like being reactive. I like knowing ahead of time what's going to happen and having time to make adjustments to make sure that all my fiscal records are in place and at the appropriate levels that I need them to be to survive as a business owner.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's like when I go to my CPA and she sits down and she looks at everything and she says, have you invested, X amount of money, which you have allowed to you? Have you put this much away for retirement? Have you done these things? And if I haven't, then I can say, okay, well, I need to write a check and do that so I can have it deducted from my taxes, because I want to, I have this amount allowed to me and it will help me out in the end. Plus, I have more money for retirement. So you're talking about a similar thing.
It's exactly similar. Now, if you do that after December 31st, you can't.
Right.
Exactly. But if you do it before December 31st, you can make the adjustment as necessary.
I like that. I like that. I haven't looked at it like that. Well, Stan, thanks so much for the advice today. Our listeners have absorbed a ton of information. If you would, I'd like you to tell us a few ways that we can connect with you online.
Oh, I'd love to. I love hearing from you guys out there. The best way to reach us is to go to the Landscape Business Pro podcast and check out our program. The next best way to do it is to email me directly at stan@landscapebusinesspro.com. If you want to, you can search for us in iTunes. Just go to iTunes, go to podcasts, and type in landscaping. We should come right up.
Excellent. Stan, thanks again.
Appreciate it, BJ.
Had the privilege of having a few conversations with Stan now, and he never ceases to amaze me with the level of insight he has. One of the biggest lessons today was about efficiency. Sometimes you have to make sacrifices and cut where it hurts so you can focus on the important areas to keep your company healthy and growing. This applies to many areas of marketing, whether it's part of your branding strategy or different marketing channels. Jack of all trades, master of two. I encourage you to check out Stan's podcast, The Landscape Business Pro. It doesn't matter if you're in the landscaping and excavating business, because there's great content for every business pro. I hope you're enjoying this new season of the Busy Marketer podcast. I'd love to get your feedback on the new format. Feel free to tweet me or leave a comment on the show notes page for this episode, thebusymarketer.com/26. The Busy Marketer is produced by me, BJ Smith. You can connect with me on Twitter at BJ Smith Strategy, or drop me an email, bj@thebusymarketer.com. You can find more information about today's show, including Stan's contact information, by visiting thebusymarketer.com/26. Thanks to my marketing recap partners, Blake Jameson, who you heard in an earlier clip, and Cynthia Johnson. Come check out the live show and make informed marketing decisions. MarketingRecap.com. And special thanks to Mark. I have no idea if you need the advice we gave today, but I do hope it was helpful. Thank you for all you do for my family. If you like what you heard today, I would appreciate you leaving a rating and review in iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. We need stars and written reviews so that more listeners like you can find the podcast. Thanks again for all the love and support. Until next time, remember to focus on the important tasks and have a productive week.